Chris, can you hear me?
I could hear you now. How are you?
We're good, we're good. I'll tell you what happened. Sam packed his bags
Yeah.
and he was out the door before I could say to him, "Oi, where are you going?" Off swimming. So he's 2 minutes away, yeah?
That's fine. Honestly,
So
no
it's good. I was
problem.
letting you know. I just thought, where's he gone? And he's just disappeared. So he's going to blame me for that. It is my fault. But he's just.
He's going to blame you because you're dad. That's why.
That's all right. I don't mind.
How
Don't
are
mind. It's...
how are you? How's everything at the moment?
Everything's really good, sir. Really good. How was your ride the weekend?
Not so good, I'll be
Yeah.
honest. It was the National 100 on Sunday. It was in Wales. The weather was pretty crap, to be perfectly honest. It wasn't great. I felt good for the first 50 miles.
Yeah.
I knew what I was. I never went into it going, I'm gonna win this. I went into it with the attitude of like, this is a really good training ride for me to practice fueling strategy, the process of just getting ready for a race, which is so important. It was never like a big goal.
Yeah.
I've never actually done a 100 mile TT before. I'd done 50 miles, 12 hours, and 24 hours. I hadn't done 100, which I thought I had, but I hadn't. And so the first 50 miles was good. I was sitting, my target wattage for the whole thing was 270 watts. I was nailing that.
Okay.
And then basically, so I struggle with tendonitis. And it flared up like something from the depths of the oceans that decided to go, you are no longer going to be able to ride at 270 watts. And I was like, oh,
My
great.
God.
I had to make the decision of carry on riding as hard as I could and potentially not
Yeah.
finish or taper it back a bit. So I dropped it down to like 220, 230 watts and
Okay.
finished. I was just over 4 hours, which was frustrating because I know I could have gone about at least 20 minutes faster, at least 20 minutes. I think it's 4 hours and 30 seconds or something like that, which is an annoying time in its own right. But the frustrating thing is that, so this is an injury which I've struggled with and sort of managed for 10 years now, which flares up at different points. And unfortunately, it flared up pretty extreme. And unfortunately, it's probably meaning that I won't be able to race the National 24, which is next weekend. So that's
So where did
frustrating.
the tendonitis, where did it flare up?
Pardon?
Where in your body? Where?
Left
Is it
knee.
leg?
Left
Knee.
knee,
Knee.
yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of quite important for cycling, one of them is.
Cyclist, I'm about to say that. Yeah. It's.
Yeah.
Is that just rest that you need? Oh, he's back, thank God.
Is it rest? To be honest, it's a combination of a multitude of things of rest, and it just doesn't feel right at the moment. So I'm seeing a physio tomorrow,
Yeah.
and we're going to kind of make and he's I've not actually worked with him before, but he's a physio and a bike fitter, so he comes from it from a cycling angle. He's the troublemaker.
Okay, go and get yourself something to drink and relax and come back. Yeah, make it what it is. Just relax. Get to calm down. Yeah.
Seeing a physio tomorrow, and we're going to make the call tomorrow whether, because I've no doubt I could probably still do the 24, but it's a case of is it worth doing it not in the best condition and just going, okay, this is fine, except that I can't do the 24, but I could target the National 12, which is the 1st of August. It's probably much more feasible to allow the issue to kind of get solved a bit more. That's kind of where my head's at the moment,
But
but
you know what the answer is.
the answer is always yes to anything.
The answer is August, yeah.
I think from the discussions I've had with the physio and with the guy that supports me at these kind of races, my coach is actually being very positive and just like, yeah, just see what happens when you talk to the physio. But my mate who supports me is kind of like, the National 12 is more feasible. The physio is kind of saying the same thing. The problem is it just doesn't feel, I know it doesn't feel right at the moment. I'm not necessarily in pain right now, but I know that if I am doing the National 24, which is realistically riding 500 miles as opposed to 100 miles, and if it flared up 50 miles in, that's 450 miles of a lot of pain.
I think also, not knowing anything about this, and from what we're doing at the moment as well, yeah, and I'll share that with you when Sam comes back, is get yourself ready for August.
Yeah.
If it messes up in the 24, August might be out the window as well.
Exactly. And it becomes, there's this whole debate and discussion of like, you know, you do get a bit of, I guess, like FOMO from not doing something. And like, I've seen the start list for the 24 this year, and I look at it and I'm like, I'm not trying to be arrogant or anything. Every year I've done it, I've come in the top 10, and I look at the start list this year and I'm like, it's definitely a top 10. I can get a top 10 out of it if I was doing well. So you get that kind of whole slight FOMO about it, but then it's, you know, actually going, it's not worth doing damage long-term. It's just not worth it. And we only have one body. It's pretty hard to change and replace parts. It's not like I can, you know, put a new set of legs on or anything. I'm stuck with the ones that are attached.
You want to do it. You know, it's going to be really hard. You know, it's like, you'll see their times at the end and you go, I could have been top five.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Where's the 24-hour taking place?
It's Wrexham. Basically North Wales, and it's the same circuit they've used for the last 4 years. I think the reason I kind of want to do it is because actually I had to change plans for something else I wanted to do early this year, which unfortunately, because of not being able to travel, I wasn't able to do. So the 24 was, the whole idea of the 24 was to use it as a training thing for this other plan. So the problem is that my competitive mind then goes and sees what the start list is like, and I'm like, I could have done quite well, but if I rationalize it, and it's like, it was never actually a goal. It wasn't a goal this year. It was just I'm doing it because I'm filling in the gap of something else. And
your coach says, yeah, go for it. Yeah.
My coach,
that's your problem as well. Cause your coach should be, what you have is bad Chris, you know, and then you have your coach who says, look, not doing this is all right. Let's focus 4 weeks out. It's not even 4 weeks, it's 3.5 weeks out. 4 weeks out on the next race.
Yeah.
And you could do a heck of a lot more. After, I think you just, when you see your physio in the next couple of days,
yeah,
that will stop you.
Yeah, in your tracks. Exactly.
When they start twisting you up and showing you where the pain is,
yeah,
You're and then they'll give you on a series of lunges and stuff like that, which you hate.
Oh,
gonna, you know, he's going to put you on strength conditioning. You know that for that whole period.
Tony, you're completely right. I know you're right. You know you're
plyometrics. Right. He's going to kill you with plyometrics. I don't train as much as Sam, but I can tell you what to do.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, Tony, you're a coach in your own right, and you know, you coach Sam, so you get it. And I think you also, I mean, you and I could talk for absolutely hours. We already know that. And I've already started recording this because I know that between you and I talking anyway, there's a lot of conversation that could go on for ages. Yeah. And, you know, you get it and you understand that the motivation that different people have for different things, you completely get it. And I'm one of these people that's like, I'm always thinking of what the next thing is, what the next challenge is, or the next race. And the problem is I put quite a lot of eggs into the basket of the 24, which I do every year. It's the nature of that race. It wasn't ever a primary goal. It was just like, oh, I could do it because it's there, you know.
Sam disappeared. Where are you? Took your time. It's time. So that meant, I did say take your time.
Oh, look, he's got the shades on as well. Sam needs business today.
Yeah.
They're nice sunglasses.
It makes him more relaxed.
Yeah, he looks apart.
So it's about eye contact and autism.
Yeah, of course.
Like this just makes him chill. Although,
yeah.
Still got good eyes. When still he gets used eyes. To you, when he gets used to you, he'll be a bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now he's cool.
Yeah.
So this is Chris.
Cool.
How are you, Sam? Chris?
Good.
Yeah. How was your swim this morning?
Yeah. How was it? What kind of swim?
My swim.
Yeah. What happened to your swim this morning? Did that
cut short
because Dad made a mistake.
Because there was a Zoom call.
There's a Zoom call.
Yeah. Because we didn't mention what it was last night.
And whose fault is it?
Both. Both. Sam, you're gonna blame Dad, aren't you?
You can blame me, it's okay. Whose fault is it? Dad's. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I just need another 200 press-ups. No.
Dad, Sam's going to make you do 200 press-ups.
No, I'm going to make him do 200 press-ups.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If he says it to me, it's
so we, to give a bit of background on this, Sam, who is here, and Tony are two absolutely lovely human beings who I've had the pleasure of talking to previously on another chat for, I don't know how long we chatted for. It was probably like an hour and a half in the end. And we talked a lot about films because I definitely know that Sam is the encyclopedia of movies and cinema that I am really envious of. And we did talk a little bit about triathlon because Sam is an incredibly talented athlete in his own right, doing some amazing things, and had a race this weekend as well. Is it a 70.3?
Yeah, a 70.3.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how was it?
Oh, that's in this, yeah, no. Well, the swim was no worries.
Uh-huh.
No worries with the swim. But went far, hard in the swim. But the cycle did in Hoka was so lumpy with ups and downs.
Yeah.
And a bunch of narrow roads. Hard part was probably full of open roads. And during the run, my stomach got all sloshy during the run. The first two laps, but it finished, like I said, they were in the final.
So it was, but it was open. It was completely open roads for the bike as well.
Yeah, all of it was open road.
Yeah. And this is.
I think that was hard.
Yeah, it looked like
narrow roads in Norfolk as well. Tractors.
Yeah, I mean Norfolk is an interesting place anyway. I've been there too many times recently, but it's generally. It's pretty flat, but it is kind of a bit rolling, and it does, you know, ow, just hit my elbow on the table. It is a bit rolling, but it's not great. As you say, the roads are very narrow. It's very tight, but I saw some photos from your Instagram, and you look great. You look fantastic. Yeah, really, really good. It's great to see that you, it's like first one done, first race of the year ticked, isn't it?
Did.
Yeah. So to give a bit of Tony, you're probably much better to explain this than I am, to explain a bit about Sam and Sam's background. And also, I think I've kind of made it clear that you coach Sam, but also you're Sam's dad. And it's something that I find the whole story of you two and both of you, I really love it. And I know we originally discussed about the idea of me coming down and spending the day with you. And unfortunately, just we haven't been able to make it work yet. and I'm very keen to still do it at some point. But and Sam can drop me on the bike. He'll instantly drop me on a run because I can't run. And but we'll have some sort of film competition and see how our knowledge is on different films. But anyway, like I think it'd be really if you can sort of like explain a bit about your relationship together and how, because Sam is an incredibly inspiring chap, and I see it from the outside, but you see it firsthand, you know.
Yeah. So I think the best way I describe it is, and everybody else here is an icon, right? It's normally the son, dad's the icon. It's the other way around for me, because his commitment, his resilience is just unbelievable.
Mm.
You know, and we sort of knew he had this, but we didn't actually know where to channel it. You know, always been competitive, mainly at video games. So he was really hot shot at Mario. What about Pokemon?
Actually, I'm fan of Pokemon.
You good at Pokemon?
Yeah, even with my brothers.
Yeah. So how many Pokemon characters are there?
There's 900
Pokemon characters.
Over each generation.
Over 900.
Do you over each generation,
names?
Yeah.
He knows most of the names of all of the Pokemon characters as well. I know we're diverting a little bit, but the concept's quite good, because one of the things that's happened, I coach Sam. So we have a father-son coach-athlete relationship. Yeah, which is quite interesting, because I think we describe ourselves as Timon and Pumbaa from The Lion King. Yeah. And Sam is Timon because he's the wiry, smart one, and I'm the fat pig, right? Basically, which is okay. And then we're also like Shrek and Donkey.
Who's who are this one?
Oh, I'm Shrek.
Yeah.
You know, Donkey's wise cracker, yeah. And
you're the onion with the layers.
I'm the layers. I'm onion boy.
Yeah.
And what other movies with Danny Glover?
With Evil Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, yeah.
Glover, Mel Gibson.
And Mel Gibson. So, you know, he's the wisecracker as well. I'm the guy who's sensible and old, you know, in all. So we our relationship is very much about that. And the reason I say that is because we argue. But the whole emphasis behind arguing is that we make up at the end. And that's in all of those movies. Shrek and Donkey, you know, getting each other's nerves. But in the end, they're best buds.
Mm.
Yeah. And so that's quite common as a theme. Monsters, Inc., Sully and Mike.
My favorite film, that is.
Hey, good. You can ask questions about that and you'll answer every one of them.
I'm planning. I'm going to line them up. I'm going to get my phone ready with IMDb for Monster League so I can absolutely see how quick Sam can answer all those.
So Sam, you know, went to normal sort of state school. They had a special unit for autism. He got diagnosed when he was 4 years old. He was swimming before he could actually talk.
That's amazing.
But what the swimming did is it taught us how fearless Sam is. So he just started in the deep end. He didn't know there was a bottom to be touched and be afraid of.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is quite good for parents, I think, and for anyone swimming. And then we went on and I knew the importance of sport. I wasn't a great sports person myself. I did a bit of sport, did a bit of running, but then I've become a TV critic, sit behind the scenes and criticize the footy and stuff like that. And we knew that we had to get him active because you just can't sit there and play computer games all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we took Sam to play ice hockey. Believe it or not, there's an autistic ice hockey team in London.
That's cool.
Which is really interesting to see because, you know, everybody just plays chase the puck. There's no sort of structured rules. It's really magic. And then... when did you start judo?
2011,
he started judo. So that's 10 years ago. He was 18. It's a local judo club. And he went there for a few years and got his brown belt in judo. And then at about 14, he learned to ride a bicycle. And because he could cycle and swim, he thought, great. Then he joined a running club locally at around the same time he started judo. And that's really for more social skills.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't to say he's a good runner or not. And I always describe his first run as a bit like Daffy Duck. Yeah, it was. And the good thing about Sam is if you teach him how to run or how to swim or how to cycle, he'll repeat it. He masters. He just does it. Just how we talk about movies, he will master it until he remembers everything. And he's since then, he did his first duathlon in Richmond Park. And then he went on to do his first triathlon at Dorney, Dorney Lakes. And that's moved on park runs, 10Ks. And it was just good to get exercise, fresh air, get him healthy, get him on a better diet. All of the good things that sports do for you. And I think the biggest thing sports did for Sam was improve his confidence, his self-esteem, his worth, his communication skills, his social skills just blossomed because of that. And in the middle of doing all of that, he'd finished his degree at St. Mary's University in sports science. So there's a smart head in there somewhere when he comes out now and again. I love him for that. He's got a 2-1, so he's a smart guy.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the big race we took on, which I don't know why we did it as parents. We just thought, I think it was a lousy win summer in 2019. And we thought, let's go to Portugal to go to Cascais and do a 70.3. Yeah? Or better still, let's go to Cascais. Sam, why don't you do a 70.3?
And we'll watch. So,
and exactly. And we did some training for Sam, you know, got him ready. He was as ready as he could be for it. His first 70.3. Got a Cascais. And he did brilliantly. And I say that because it was his first race. But what we had was the unenviable IBS. Runner's bloat, too much water, slushy tummy. It's the same thing we had at Holcombe this weekend, which is sort of equivalent. But after he finished that race, and I think it took you about 20 minutes to come out of the tent, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because his tummy was bloated.
Yeah.
We just said, do you want to do it again? And Sam said, definitely.
Brilliant.
And then the choice was... I think last year with COVID, that stopped a lot of things last year. Just stopped racing and everything. But it was good because we had a chance to think. And the discussion was, does Sam do this as a bucket list? Or do we get to be the best he can? And we thought, yeah, let's go for it. Because, you know, the other side of the coin, which you probably don't know about, is only 7% of graduates with autism have a full-time job in the UK.
You see, I ironically, and we discussed this a little bit last time, and I think I mentioned to you I've got an autistic nephew as well.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, he's young. I think he's three now, or four. But there's part of the school that he goes to, which is in Kent, they are looking at, this is something they've been talking about quite a lot, is... the employment for autistic kids. And so what my cousin is one of the chairs on the school's board of governors as well. Which is great because he's a very well-connected guy who also is involved in he's an accountant and he also runs like a property management company as well at the same time. So what he's done kind of in support of the school is has helped them to effectively open a cafe, which is to employ some of the kids through the schools and create a graduate program for the kids there. And the site for the cafe is one of the buildings that he manages in his property management portfolio. And they're, you know, fundraising to get all the equipment and everything now. And it's because they're very, very switched on about that employment thing. As you say, the figure is crazy low. It really is.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think they say it's only 16% of adults on the spectrum in full-time employment. And that's not we don't call it worthwhile employment.
Mm.
So we just thought, you know, he's got a bit of skill here. He can swim, run, he's dedicated. And I think what we had to do was to learn that because Sam likes mastery,
mm-hmm.
he likes repetitive things, he likes structure. Any athlete or coach will tell you, wow, that's what training's about. It's about structure, it's about repeating, it's about mastery, and then it's about delivering in the race.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. Yeah?
And because Sam loves training, he thought, eh, go for it, just enjoy yourself, knock yourself out. And now we're on that journey. We've got a big journey and big plans for this year, big plans for next year. And right now Sam's a full-time triathlete, you know, full-time, 24/7, no mortgage, no kids. It's absolutely wonderful. You know, everybody says, can I adopt them? You know, because we pay for everything. It's not true actually. But he's doing well. And I think, like, you know, we've been able to get sponsors, I think is the big thing as well.
And I think, yeah. you know, having the sponsors on board, one is it's obviously great for you guys because it helps Sam with equipment, whether that's with Hoka or with the, you know, the tri-suit. Is it a Hoob?
And Cervelo, yeah.
And then you've got Cervelo as well. Having these brands on board is fantastic because, like, I think what people often forget is it is the cost of equipment is a lot. And triathlon is three sports, and they're three sports that are all very expensive. You know, you're looking to be competitive, you need to really be having the best equipment out there. And when, you know, Sam is an incredibly talented young man, and you want to provide the best you can get. So it's fantastic that these brands have got on board. And we got put in touch together through Cervelo, and are, you know, incredibly thankful that Gillian made that happen as well. Because it's great. It's great for me to talk to you guys. It's for me, it's lovely to see that Sam has got, in my opinion, like, and we're obviously slightly biased, but some of the best bikes out there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And
so it's brilliant. I just let you know the discussions that I have. So what I do is I coach. I'm a taxi driver. I pack his bikes. I do a bit of mechanics. Try not to break the bikes.
Yeah.
I repair wetsuits. You know, and that really leaves Sam to do what he does well, which are his hill reps and his rowing and all that sort of stuff. We do Training Peaks with him. We plan together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got his visual Garmin watch. He's got him. He's just got a new 945.
Like, oh, hello. Nice.
So all of that stuff we do together now, it's we don't use feelings, we use numbers.
Yeah, which is great.
So everything is about, you talked about power, we use normative power for cycling.
Yeah.
And we use, there's this new thing we're going to start working on, use called ProPace on Garmin.
Okay, Garmin, yeah.
You set the time you want to finish. And you can start from an easy pace and go fast, or go fast and finish slower. And it puts it in the watch to tell you how far you are in front or behind the schedule in real time. So we're using all of these, any tools, because it's factual.
Yeah.
It's a number. Yeah. And the numbers are easy to follow as opposed to, you know, it's like cycling. You know, I feel I can go faster.
But yeah.
You shouldn't really be doing that. You should say, I'm using my FTP. I'm going 80% of my FTP, and that's how I'm going to cycle. I know what the number is, and I'm going to stay in that zone.
Exactly.
As opposed to thinking, oh, I really feel good today. I'm going to go for it. And, you know, 2 miles later, you've blown up and you've hit the wall.
It's about, it is, I mean, I find the process of training incredibly rewarding and very satisfying to know that, as you say, it's following numbers and it's following a routine. And there's also that element of gamification to it, isn't there? Yeah. Where things like Zwift come in. And if Sam's a big fan of, as we've already briefly mentioned, Pokemon, things like Zwift also become quite useful for that and allowing you to train and focus. And it is still kind of gaming, in my opinion. I love Zwift. I think it's a great tool. What level are you at now, Sam?
I've maxed Swift cycling, level 50 max.
Yeah.
And I go for on running.
How many levels is there on running?
I think it's 50 for max.
50 as well. I've not done any running on Zwift, so I'm level. Does it start at 0 or 1? I'm at the bottom. Starts at 1.
Yeah.
But the bike, I'm level 50 as well. But I'm going through that thing of buying all the different bikes at the moment and completing all the different routes. And the new Japan course is the one which I need to complete the routes on. Have you done the Japan one?
I have, yeah.
It's nice, isn't it?
What do you think's your favourite route?
My favourite route. I think my favourite route is the Watopia Volcano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the desert.
Yeah.
In Watopia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, yeah.
I'll just Swift.
Have you done the, how about Von 2? I think it's called Von 10.
The what?
The Von 2 one in France.
Oh, I haven't cycled there yet. Well, we'll cycle there one day.
Yeah, good. It's the Von 2 one is very hard. It's harder than Alpe du Zwift. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good one to do, definitely. So we mentioned we've regularly discussed. I'm to show you what's on my phone. It's currently Monsters Inc. We've sort of discussed in the past is like Sam has this unbelievable ability to recount anything from films. And I tried last time to beat Sam on this, and Sam put me to shame, quite frankly. I was sitting trying to Google things as quick as I could with some of the questions, and Sam was just absolutely nailing it. And I want to fire some at you, Sam, because I know how good you are at this. What year did Monsters, Inc. come out?
It's 2001.
What year did Monsters University come out?
Oh, 2013.
Damn it. Who plays Mike Wazowski?
That's Billy Crystal.
Who plays Sully?
John Goodman.
Okay. Name me, this might do it. Name me 5 films that John Goodman's been in.
Well, he's currently been in The Emperor's New Groove.
Yep.
The Flintstones.
Yep.
The Flintstones. Mr. Goodman. Mr. Goodman.
I think I've got a good one here.
Mm-hmm. Time to go on.
You could get this one. There's definitely more, Sam. There's some good ones.
Oh, that's a good.
Maybe it was a King in England. What's that one called?
Okay.
Go on, say it. I know what, Sam. You don't want to get it wrong. Just say anything. Guess. I've got you
on this one, Sam. So
we can give him some pointers and he's going to go yes.
Okay.
I'm going to look up and give him some pointers because my dad's here to help him.
Oh, he's so close to one. There's another one which is a series of films.
Oh man, so how many you got so far? You got Obviously, you got New Groove, Flintstones.
Yeah. He's in a... Go on.
Oh, so many you know. You know all of these.
There is so many,
B,
isn't there?
Oh, it's B-movie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nigget.
B-movie, the Princess and the Frog.
Let's see if I can get some more. I'm not showing these to him, by the way. I'm giving them some clues. Frog. Oh, my gosh.
Even the Jungle Book 2.
What else?
Yeah.
What's that outside? Oh, those things that we drive.
Oh, the thing we drive.
What do we drive?
Car.
Was he in that?
Yeah. It was a cameo appearance. Car.
Yeah, the cameo appearance in Cars. Okay.
There's one which I always think of, which was a TV series I watched as a kid, and all I'm going to say is Robots in Disguise. Come on, Sam. Robots in Disguise.
What movie had? You know this, you know.
No.
I'm going to tell you. This is really good. The movie with those two guys on a road trip. There's a big car accident, big chases, and they sing.
That was the Booth Brothers 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah,
great film.
Wow, you know all of this stuff. Come on, let's see if I can help you out again. Was he in the original one as well?
No,
he's not in the original one.
Oh, what about Bagheera number two?
Not Bagheera. He wasn't Bagheera. He was Baloo in the Jungle Book 2.
Gosh, you see, you know more stuff than you think.
There's one series of films that I'm really surprised you. And to be fair, it's not obvious that he's in it. It's a series of films that the first few have got Shia LaBeouf in them and Mark Wahlberg. It's a tough one. I'm trying to think.
Right, come on, he's giving in.
I'm giving
what
you.
What series was he in? come on, help him, save him.
Do you know the one I'm thinking of is Transformers? He's in Transformers.
I don't think he wasn't. You sure he wasn't Transformers?
He plays a Decepticon, I think, called Hound.
Yeah, he's Transformers. That's right, 2014.
Yeah.
Age of Extinction.
Yeah.
He's won.
But I mean, to be fair, that was an incredibly... I was going on the niche of the niche there.
That's right.
If we go back to... So as anyone that's listening, you can see that Sam has this incredible ability to recount films and... information. And I think the last one that I did, which wasn't that challenging at all for Sam, we went down the Star Wars route, because Sam could name, in fact you definitely can do it, Sam, when did every Star Wars film come out? What year?
Star Wars. Yeah. Well, it started original 1977, 1980, 1983, prequel 1999, 2002, 2005, the sequel trilogy for 2015, 2017, and 2019.
It's incredible. And I asked it to you last time as well, and I'm gonna see if you can expand, like if you can carry on adding to it. We asked Harrison Ford what five films that Harrison Ford is in. This is easy.
Go for The Fugitive. Yeah, The Fugitive, Patriot Games, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
The Expendables 3.
Yeah, that's a good one. Expendables
3. Oh, no. That's one, Blade Runner.
Yeah, perfect. And Blade Runner is like, I think, one of my favorite films of all time.
God.
Both the new one and the first one and the second one. I think they're really good films. And he's in both of them. And what year did the original Blade Runner come out?
That was 1982.
And what year did the second one come out?
2019.
Oh, nearly.
2016.
1 year, one, so close, 1 year out.
It's 2017.
It's 2017. Yeah. So, you know, it's incredible. It's like the being able to retain this. This is information I can't ever retain. And I every time we've talked, I'm always so impressed with Sam's film knowledge. It's pretty crazy. What's your favorite film at the moment, Sam?
It's still Robin Hood.
Yeah. Which Robin Hood though?
From 1973. Disney version.
The Disney version.
Yeah.
Have you seen Robin Hood Men in Tights?
No, oh, but well, I see some of it.
Yeah.
With Men in Tights, with I've seen some of it.
It's Mel Gibson's version, isn't it?
No, that's not Mel Gibson, that's Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks, I see, okay. Yeah. There you are. Typical me.
So Robin Hood Men in Tights is a film that when I was a kid, my dad had it on VHS. And the only films he had on VHS was Robin Hood Men in Tights and The Blues Brothers. That was it. That was the only films we were allowed to watch. The other film he had was Pulp Fiction, which is a film that is a great film. But as a kid, my dad was like, you can't watch this. It's too much. You're not allowed to watch this one.
Hey, Chris, why don't you try some Blues Brothers questions?
Oh, man. What? I know so many quotes from the Blues Brothers. Let me think of a good one. In the Blues Brothers, what happens to the cigarette lighter in the police car?
Cigarette lighter. I think it was a... It's in the chain.
Yes, or you say anything, doesn't
it? I think it might have... I think presumably Fanny. This Fanny. Or this draw.
You don't know, do you? You've got it again.
Well, no.
I'm just playing. I'm playing. I'm embarrassed. Yeah. I know.
It was... what happened was they got the new police car and... John Belushi goes to light a cigarette two or three times and then gets really annoyed, throws the cigarette lighter out the window, and then about 5 minutes later he looks down to go get the cigarette lighter and goes, where's the cigarette lighter, not realizing he's thrown it out the window. It's I've watched that film more times than I could ever recount, because it was just like, I have such a good memory of it, and just watching it with my dad. It was just the one that we always watched. And all the music in it is amazing. There's amazing music in it. I feel like I need to rewatch it, definitely. Do you know what year the first Blues Brothers film came out?
That's 1980.
Didn't even question it, did you? You knew that one straight away. Who is the very, very famous reverend in the film?
I know that one. He sings that song.
James Brown.
Yeah. Who is, James Brown is, he's so, so good in it as well. He's an absolute legend in it. And I'll give you a good little fact that I didn't know this, but Carrie Fisher is in it.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, you knew that.
I did.
What role?
Oh, she was a mystery woman.
I didn't realise it was Carrie Fisher. But
go sleeping. Imagine if it were pointless, Carrie Fisher would be a zero.
That's it. So Sam likes pointless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Game on TV because he likes the obscure answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. What's, I think what's great to like, this is part of a lot of this is as you've discussed, we've talked about before, it is part of the autism, isn't it? Being able to recount it.
And you know, we talk about autism as a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
It's the challenge was, how do you take this ability to watch something or learn something, master it, and then recall it?
Mm-hmm.
And then thinking, there must be some jobs out there that you could do where this is relevant. You know, they say things like computer software testing and hackers do repetitive tasks like this.
Mm.
And we just wanted to find out what you could do that led him to this. And it was sometimes it's luck and sometimes it's fate. Mm. We are where we are. And Sam loves training. You know, this guy's never late for a session. Yeah, always finishes every session he's working on. It's you know, you're a coach and you have an athlete like this. It's the perfect, almost the perfect athlete.
Mm.
The risk I always say is that I can give Sam anything to do and he'd do it, which means he could overtrain.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm teaching him when to say no. For example, I offer him the chance to say, I mean, last night you were supposed to go swimming, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you just cancelled swimming. You said, let's postpone swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you said you felt a little tired after the race. So I said, you know what? It's how your body feels. And I'm trying to get him to, if your body feels like that, just cancel it. But it's not going away because it will come back 2 days later. It's not like he's not going to do the rep. It's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So it works really well.
So the last 70.3, how was that for you as a coach?
Look, Holcomb, which he did on Sunday, was Sam's second 70.3 ever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Sam's told you earlier about his tummy problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, slushy tummy and stuff. And the goal was to do sub 5 hours. You know, it's one of those benchmarks, sub 3 hour marathon, sub 5 hour, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he did 5 hours 22. His run was 113 minutes. And that was contradictory to the 78 minute half marathon he ran 3 weeks ago. So there was something definitely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was trying to think, what's gone wrong here? Everything else was within schedule for him to do it. And I just started, first thing you did, you blame yourself as a coach, you know, mm-hmm. nutrition.
Of course.
Yeah,
nutrition is hard to get right. It just is.
Yeah. And this is why I said to you earlier, you know, you're talking about doing your 24-hour ride. I'm like a bit reticent about sending Sam out again because he's got an A race in 8 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the other part of me saying, there's a half Ironman in Staffordshire.
There is.
On the 18th.
Near me?
Just throw him in there and see how he goes, yeah?
Yeah.
So I'm in that little bit of a dilemma right now. And Staffordshire's full, but if we get a place in Staffordshire, I'll probably just throw him in and see how he reacts, change his diet a little bit, and just see if he gets through it and just learn from it, because it's a learning process now. As you know, and so there are two things. There's fructose, maybe, because that's in his energy food. Maybe the bike position was mm-hmm. too aggressive. You know, so his stomach was tightened up there. And, you know, the way the blood flows to the legs and all of that could have caused it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just moving now to remove fructose completely.
So there's something, it's interesting you bring that up because I think I mentioned to you before, I've got a good friend who is a nutritionist for EF Pro Cycling. And he normally supports me at things like the National 24, et cetera, et cetera. And it was the second year, was it the second or third year? I can't remember what year it was, but it's the second or third year that I competed at the National 24. I've done it three times. And the whatever I was having, which was a gel, which was the quite often with gels, to get they quite often have a very high fructose level. And what I mean by a high fructose level, it's high for the percentage of the gel. It's higher than normal. And for me, that over 24 hours, similarly over, you know, a half Ironman, it's going to cause you some gut discomfort if you're taking the same gel. And that was 100% the problem I was having. So I threw up in the middle of the race. And the problem with that is when you're sick, you're putting yourself straight on the back burner. So I came back in because on the 24, every 4 hours, my strategy is always every 4 hours, refuel, you know, water, gels, food, everything like that. And Will was like, "That's sick on your bike. Have you thrown up?" And I was like, "Yes, I have actually thrown up twice." And he was like, "Right, okay, here is a bag of sweets. Eat the whole bag of sweets right now because we need to get some carbs in you. And I know you like Haribo. This is easy. Eat this bag of sweets, Haribo, straight away." So just literally scooped out, whole bag of Haribo gone. And it was then a case of basically swapping the gels over to something else. And that we only figured that out because that is the sort of thing you only start to learn when you're doing the actual race. Because like for a 24-hour race, you don't do a 24-hour, you don't ride for 24 hours before it.
Nope.
Like a heart 70.3, you don't do a heart 70.3 to train for a 70.3. And it's the same thing. And the nutritional strategy for those kind of things is something that you can't really test it apart from in the races itself, which is why you do, you know, additional races. It's to get in the motions of racing. So what we actually found out was it was that the fructose level was considerably high in this brand of gel. I won't touch them because the thought of them makes me feel really sick. But Will did quite a lot of research into fructose levels in brands and what the pH levels were across different brands. And the idea was to find what was the most neutral pH gel on the market. And what we found was Martin was the most neutral. And Martin, and it's what I've been using since. And I'm very lucky that they have in the past sent me some stuff because it's not cheap, I'll be honest. It's not cheap. In the past, they have sent me some stuff. But because it's...
And they got fructose in their stuff.
They do, but it's much more of a neutral pH. So they balance it out better. So with a lot of other brands, the fructose level is incredibly high. That's how they get the flavoring in it.
Yep.
Martin's a neutral flavor. And you always have a balance of fructose and I can't remember what the other one is. There's two different types of
sugar. Maltodextrin or glucose, isn't it? So
yeah. So we balanced it out using the Martin stuff, but there's other like maltodextrin stuff that does the same kind of thing. There's loads of things in the market that are very similar to Martin, but it just happened that that's the one that worked really well for me. And since we changed, that's what I've been using as a gel for product for things. The other thing that I've also found that actually works quite well is honey, just honey. It's natural, it's pretty simple, you know, those kind of things. But it is, you know, as you say, it's this bloating, it's very common. And I don't think people realize the effect of taking, you know, across the whole race, 70.3 or an Ironman or a 12-hour, 100-mile TT, whatever it is, over this kind of period of time, it can seriously affect your body eating the same stuff. For me, the other fundamental thing is I try and eat normal food as much as I can. When I say normal food, I mean like peanut butter and jam sandwich, you know. Roast potatoes, that's what I like as well. Roast potatoes and like, you know, normal things, because I just think it's better for you to be eating normal stuff.
Yeah. So what do you have for breakfast normally, Sam?
Normally, snack of jacks with peanut butter with some almonds. Almonds and a jug of water.
A jug of water, a whole jug.
Yeah.
How big is this jug?
Not me. 2 liters. Drink for that. There's a target marker.
Target marker. We've got a target marker. It's the easy way. So you drink from there to there. That's it. So not perfect. Too late, a jug. You'll be sloshing around. And do you have what? Omelette in the morning as well sometimes? Or scrambled eggs?
No, yeah, scrambled eggs.
Yeah. And tell Chris about your day. What would you do? Like, you work out in the day, you do a hill rep. What happens after you come back?
They do a hill rep. We do a hill rep, come back, not pooped out. Just sweating. To come back, sweaty and get back hungry.
And then you have lunch?
I have lunch. Yeah. Then I'll do lunch fed. Then I do another workout.
Yeah. So what do you cook for lunch?
Chicken wings, gluten-free spaghetti.
Yeah.
Nice.
And freshies, such as mixed freshies or peas.
And then anything to drink?
Sometimes the remaining jug of water.
The water, yeah.
Yeah.
Nutribullet?
Yeah. A Nutribullet, like banana or berries or spinach, or rotate around. Almond milk, green seeds, and cocoa powder. And some of the beetroot juice.
I like beetroot juice.
Yeah. So we just started using beetroot juice as well because it's one of the, it's got the FODMAP grouper products as well. It's good for his digestive system and so on. So
yeah, it's really, really good. And it's good. Beetroot's great because of the nitrate levels in it. So it's really good to, helps increase blood flow through your arteries. It's really, really good. I'm a big, there's all this science and stuff which talks about like supplementing beetroot before races and stuff. And I personally think it works. I think it's really good. And you can get those little shots, the little beet, I think the company called Beet It, and they make shots. And that's what I buy. And I normally take in the lead up to anything, like 2 weeks prior, two a day, which is quite a lot. But I think they're 400 milligrams of nitrate per shot, which is that's a lot of beetroot, hell of a lot of beetroot. But there's a lot of science behind the fact that it's good. I mean, obviously it's very personal to how accurate it is for everyone, but in my head, I think it helps. So that's 90% of it at the end of the day. But it sounds like Sam has a lot of food between breakfast and lunch. It's good. What do you have for dinner, Sam?
I have bigger dinner, sometimes a steak, with goofy spaghetti, or sea bass, goofy spaghetti, or maybe a big chicken, or curry, rice.
Yeah, you make fajitas, don't you?
And fajitas.
I love fajitas.
Cooks his own stuff.
Do you enjoy cooking, Sam? Do you like cooking?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah? Is it do you like to follow a recipe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I love cooking. I really enjoy it. And I guess a question for you, Tony, is how come the gluten-free?
We went to see a nutritionist because of Sam's IBS.
Yeah.
And, you know, a nutritionist says it's a bit of a science, a bit hit and miss, a bit of trial and error. So we went on the gluten-free path. I think primarily what used to happen is that on a plane, Sam would just get bloated on the plane. It was a bloating. And we just couldn't figure out what it was. And we had to cut out the wheat-based food. So any wheat-based bread and stuff like that. So it's all nuts and pulses for protein, dairy-free, so it's almond milk. I don't think it's so bad with the milk, but the gluten-free we started probably a couple of years ago.
Interesting.
And every now and again we get caught out. So I think we went to see his grandparents in Jamaica on the way back. we thought, oh, seaside restaurant, fried fish and stuff, you know. So we stopped and we had some food, and Sam was there. And he said, oh, look, they do chicken wings. So they did some chicken wings on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
You like chicken wings, but they dip them in flour, wheat-based flour.
Yeah, of course.
And we just didn't think. We're on the flight, and about 3 hours in, it starts the bloating and the noise and the planes up and down. About an hour at the Heathrow, came our friend Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
You know Ralph?
I know Ralph.
And the poor woman in front of us, her hair was covered in puke and clothes, and, you know, it happens.
It happens, it happens. Yeah, I've met Ralph a few times. He's not one of my closest friends, shall we say. We don't see eye to eye.
So we just it's today I was looking at Kenyan runners' diets, and it's a lot of it's starch based, and it's rice, it's yams, it's pasta now, because a lot of them live in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And pasta is, you know, staple for all endurance athletes. Mm. And rice is naturally gluten-free, as is potatoes,
yep,
for example. So we got one of those ninja fryers now, so that they're pretty good because there's no oil in them. It just sort of oven makes fries and stuff, because I'm just something easy to eat. But I'm going to start moving him on to boiled food, and I'm just going to clean up the food completely now.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing someone said is, Sam having enough salt in his diet, because you know, is he a sweater, for example, and the salt level is high. So we got the Cervelo Caledonian the other day, and we looked at his old bike, and he had tri bars on it in his old road bike. And I thought, put the Allen key in, take them off, transfer them to the Caledonian, whatever. The salt buildup in there. So I've got to drill the nuts out this week. To get it off. And, you know, the rest of the bike's okay because he wipes his kit down.
Yeah.
Quite well. And I was thinking, I couldn't believe it. They just wouldn't come off. You know, the Allen key smashed up the nut.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So I'm just going to drill it out or cut it off. I just, what you got to do? You know what I mean? If I can drill it out, I can reuse it, which is great. But then I'm looking at, a mate of mine says he knows the guys down at Precision, so we're going to do the salt test.
Yes, definitely. The salt test is really, really good.
Yeah, it potentially just lacks salt, which is why the water was there. It could be that simple.
Yeah, it's fascinating how something, it can literally be so simple like that. Like the Precision Hydration salt test stuff is, I've not done it, but the same guy, Will, the nutritionist, he's a huge believer in how good those tests are. And how useful they are as a metric to understand your salt levels. And I buy Precision Hydration hydro tabs because I think the salt content in them is much higher than most other brands on the market. And they do a variety of different salt contents. It's very open and honest what it is. And the reason why I buy them is when I'm doing ultra distance races across countries, I buy the purple ones. I think that's one of the higher concentrations of salt. And I buy them because if I'm, you know, doing these races across countries like Kyrgyzstan, Morocco, etc., you genuinely don't know when you're going to be able to get salt or anything. And having high concentrated salt in your drinks in those kind of races helps with your hydration as well as just your general feeling good, to be perfectly blunt. And so I always take them for those kind of races just because it's like a guaranteed high dosage of salt and food. The other thing that you, in those kind of races, like you might find a lot of the guys were having like tins of sardines, and I'm vegetarian, so I don't eat sardines. And I also am allergic to quite a lot of seafood, so I just don't even touch it. So sardines is what quite a lot of people were doing. But for me, it was a case of like going, what can I find? In Morocco, it actually was quite good. Like you could always get bread. You could always get like Philadelphia, like the little cheese triangles, got Spider-Man ones. They were great. And you could always get like olive oil. You could always get peanut butter, that kind of stuff. So there was always the ability to buy food that kind of did the job.
You know, that's another choice. Morocco is somewhere we could go to. and get some hot one with the training, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I was thinking, like, you know, so, and I think in Morocco, I keep thinking Egypt because of the crazy drivers. I've been there for work. And
then Morocco is, I'll be honest, Morocco is the same with crazy drivers. I would say somewhere like Lanzarote is a much better bet. Morocco is an amazing, incredible country. And Marrakesh as a city is absolutely stunning, but there are a lot of mad drivers there, definitely. And it's probably more suited to, I would say, more off-road than road.
Okay.
Which the Caledonia would still work for it, but it means, you know, more off-road tires on it and maybe not quite the right kind of training for what would work for Sam, but you could always take a mountain bike.
Yeah, you see, the even for the training, you know, on the bike front, it's, I think I told you last time that we're putting a lot of mountain biking into his training, and we're waiting on Savella to send us an Aspire 5, which we continue to wait on. You know, we know what's happening in the market with bikes anyway, but we can do a lot of that on the Caledonian 5 anyway. Just put the right tires on, and it's tough enough to. We're not going full mountain bike. We're just going trail.
Yes,
and it will do that. It's good enough for that. So. And that's a big part of what we're doing. One is for cadence, one because the resistance is higher, you get a bigger rubber capacity out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives him bike handling skills. Mm. That's the other really big thing.
Oh, we know Sam's an absolute beast, don't we? Super strong.
So what do you ride at now for, what's your normative power? Yeah, what did Dad say you need to ride?
It's about 240.
Yeah, so we just set him 240 for the time being.
It's perfect.
And I know there's more. But when you're doing a triathlon, if it was just the ride, I'd say 260, 270 all the way through.
Hmm.
But because you've got to run. And again, what we're not doing is saying, I want you to ride at this speed. I just want you to ride at this normative power.
Exactly, because you have to bear in mind the terrain's going to change.
Terrain, like, and stuff, yeah.
It's very easy to go hard, go too hard going uphill. And it, like, there's generally no issues with coasting on the downhill or just knocking it back a bit, but it's so easy to go way too hard when you're climbing.
So it's fine. It's I said, and we talked about, the good thing is that, sort of back to the autism and Sam, is that I think more companies are recognizing the need for inclusion and diversity in the sport. Because I'm sure even you doing your long distance TTs, there are not a lot of black athletes, for example, there.
There are very, very few.
Yeah.
You and I touched on this, I think, a little bit the last time we chatted, that their cycling is getting better.
Of course, yeah.
But it's a long way to go for being an inclusive sport. I mean, the thing is, like, when you look at running, you don't really need anything for running. It doesn't matter. Like,
pair of shoes. Yeah.
You need a pair of shoes. I mean, people run barefoot. Like, I was talking to a guy yesterday, he's a barefoot runner.
Yeah.
That's mad in my mind, but fair enough. But then with cycling, I mean, there's much more to it that you need in terms of equipment, and not just the bike, it's everything around it. And as a, you know, it does feel like it's going in the right direction in terms of inclusivity, and race is definitely part of that. And another thing that I think, there's a few different points that are quite important to it. Race is one of them right now. Sex is part of it as well,
which is
also getting better. And also, if you're, you know, gay, straight, bisexual, et cetera, like that, there's a big article that came out in, Cycling Weekly, talking about the fact that there is no openly gay pro cyclist racing at World Tour. No openly gay. That's the key word there. And on the same stance, if we look at, you know, I've been weirdly, strangely connected to Quebeca and the work that Quebeca does through MTN Quebeca when it was that, and now whatever the team's called, I don't even know what it's called now. Yeah. Quebeca Next Hash, I think the team's now called. And that's a team that's Doug Ryder there is doing great things for helping with that. And but there is still a lot of work that needs to be done. And we've seen things in the past, you know, I think maybe in the US, it's maybe not been, I say, it's such a tricky thing subject to talk about because in, you know, I think you and I talked about in this early previously on the stance of privilege. And for me as a white 31-year-old male, I am not intentionally, but I am coming from a privileged side of cycling, completely unintentionally, but that's just the nature of it. And so for me, I have to try and take myself out of my sliders that I happen to be wearing and put myself in another pair of sliders to understand it from a different perspective, which is always, it is hard. And I had similar discussions with my partner talking about, you know, and I'm sure I mentioned this to you before about, it was the Sarah Everett case and a woman just walking home. Like my partner, I wouldn't ever second guess about just going outside at night and going for a walk. My partner, in contrast, is like, if she was with her mates, they would all text each other, say, before they would leave to go home, they always do it where they say, remember what we're wearing. And that's something I would have never thought of. And, you know, cycling as a sport has always been a white male dominated sport. It's like golf. Golf is another example of that. And slowly it's getting better. And we're seeing this from brands, and brands need to really, you know, open their eyes up to this. And it is great that it's starting to be seen. And it's also great that, you know, the work that yourself and Sam are doing to help promote that is fantastic. And I'm very in awe of it. I think it's fantastic what you guys do.
You know, it's like, so I think that there's a lot of stuff in there because that's a privilege. Sam's mother and myself, we've had good careers, professional careers. You know, I've been in IT and I've retired to coach Sam and stuff and carry me around and taxi. I always complain about being a taxi. But Marilyn is still working. You know, she's at university. She's a professor. You know, she's a smart one of the very smart one of the family. I think I come at the bottom of the pool. But aside from that, it's, you know, Sam's a fit one as well. She goes to the gym. I'm like the slob of the family, basically. But when I talk about privilege, we could afford, as we can now, to pay Sam's gym membership fees.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, we can afford for Sam to go to judo classes. I can hire a swimming coach to do one-to-ones with Sam, which I need to do now.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had the other side of the coin is once people hook into Sam, we've had some amazing folk out there. There's an ultra runner called Andy Wren, who whenever we need Sam to do a session, Andy says, yeah, come on, I'll run with him, for example. And he says, I said, you know, here's something. He said, I don't want any money. He said, no money. He said he learns more from Sam
about
coaching than. And that's just that. We have another guy up in North London who's got an autistic son, and he said if Sam wants physio post the race, come and see him and he'll set it on. And there are a lot of people who've been really unbelievably helpful, either because they've got children or family members on the spectrum, or they see Sam as just inspirational.
Mm.
Yeah. And the inspirational bit is quite interesting because the British Triathlon, we posed a question over a year ago, is Sam a triathlete with autism or an autistic triathlete?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference, because if you see him as an athlete with autism, it's like saying, yeah, this guy's a Paralympian, he's a great athlete, but he's missing a limb. He's a, you know.
Yes, yeah.
So you don't say he's a guy who's got a physical disability, who's an athlete. You say he's an athlete who has this disability. And that's quite interesting, because until Sam really fully breaks through, they'll keep saying he's autistic and a triathlete.
Mm.
Where what we're saying, he has traits of a good athlete, relentlessness, determination, not giving up. I tell you, Sunday, when you saw this guy running, bent over, yeah, and decided what was going to happen on Sunday, I'm not DNFing. You will not DNF. And he just kept going, one foot in front of the other. And we're there as parents saying, you know, if I asked him to stop, he'd have said no.
Yep.
Yeah, so I just stayed with him. Every time he came on the lap, I said, how are you feeling? A little bit better, all right, just keep going. No need to go too fast. But he doesn't have DNF in his DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I'll write that down somewhere.
That sounded really good. I like that.
Yeah. And that's the first thing about Sam. But you know what? That's come from Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to win. You know, I'm going to get across that line first. So all of that sort of adds up together to where he is today. And there's a part of me that's really quiet. Say, oh, he's 28 now. Jan Frodeno's 39. Roger Federer's what, 39 as well?
I think
he's kicking it.
He's a legend in his own right. And now I think
he's a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm saying, we've got a few years to make Sam a legend.
Yeah, he's exactly. Gonna be a legend. Yeah.
And that's the goal. You know, be a legend and enjoy. Just enjoy the ride. You know what I mean? We'll make it happen for him. Because it's happening, you know. But you've seen it. He's been in front page of Triathlon Canada magazine. He's been in Triathlon Germany magazine, 220 Triathlon UK. I mean, he's like, you got to understand, 2 years ago, we didn't have this vision for him.
Mm.
It's just that it's a damn good story. Yeah. He's inspirational. You know, you talk about a three-year-old kid there, and I get DMs on Instagram, and Sam gets them mainly, and it says, my child's 5, just been diagnosed. Reading about Sam means we've got a future. We can see a future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my daughter's 8, she loves swimming. I read about Sam. You know, how do I get her to swim more? How do I control her swimming? And, you know, you get those sorts of questions and we respond to them, but it's really positive, positive. You know, it's, I work really hard not to see autism as a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're trying to change the brand. Now, on the back of his tri suit is determined.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using determined, not disabled. As I said, you know what I mean? Because how can somebody who has a encroached disability be doing better than someone who's neurotypical and doesn't have a disability?
Yes.
It's definitely not a disability. It's a superpower. You know, it says, you know, how can a guy, I saw a guy the other day, well, he's 70 years old, ran 200 meters in 26 seconds. These are super people. Yeah. There's a guy who ran a marathon. I think the record over 70 is 2 hours 54. Sub 3 hour marathon in his 70s.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
It's, as you say, it is a superpower. It's about, for me, it's like a marker of talent, if that makes sense. And it shows true talent. Nothing should be considered as a negative in life. You know, we're all given a certain set of cards and we have to deal with them the best that we can. And the cards that you have are your strength and your weakness at the same time. But you have to, you know, understand how your uniqueness makes you an incredible human being and, you know, incredibly talented at whatever you set your heart and your mind at. And what Sam and yourself have done is set your heart and mind at something which truly shows Sam's talent the best light possible and helps to inspire so many people out there in the world without even really realizing it. And, you know, the story is beautiful in its own way. And that's why there's so much interest from press and stuff, but it's also so humbling and simple that, and very humanizing. And that's what is really so beautiful about it. And as far as Sam's concerned, Sam is just like, I'm doing this because I know I can, and I know I'm this good, you know, and I know how to train, and I train properly. And then I just annoy Chris by showing off my film knowledge. And it's fantastic. Inspiration is a word that is too often used. And the same with the, you know, legend is a word that's too often used. And equally on the flip side of it, I think the word hate is a word that's way too often used, and they're not used in the right context. But, you know, what you both are doing, and I do, and I've always stressed when you and I have chatted, when Tony, that it is both of you. It's not just Sam. It's not just you, Tony. What both of you are doing is incredibly inspiring. It's the your commitment to Sam and Sam's commitment to your projects and plans and goals is exceptional. And I can only applaud you. I think it's fantastic. I really do.
Thank you. I mean, it's on our side. You're seeing Sam here on this Zoom call, and this is a humble guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, he's just going about his day, his job. You know, I always say to Sam, Sam, mm-hmm. why do you do triathlons?
Oh, before I started a duathlon.
That's not the question. That's the press question. That's the press answer.
So
you're talking to Dad. Yeah? Just to Dad. Don't listen to Chris. Chris isn't here, yeah? So why do you triathlon, Sam?
I enjoy it. It's my favourite discipline. It's my favourite, one of my favourite sport.
I'm going to take away triathlons from you.
Right.
It's banned now. Right? Yes, banned. Stop. Okay. Banned. Why not? I'm banning it.
Okay.
Send all the bikes back. Mm-mm. Yep. Mm-mm. What would you do if you didn't have triathlon?
If I did the triathlon, what would I do?
What would you do?
I'd end up seeing myself and doing nothing.
Do nothing, yeah?
Yeah.
So I'm you don't have to use this. I'm just telling you from a perspective. The other thing about Sam is a literal interpretation of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that was upsetting. Dad's not taking it away. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. When
the look that you're getting from Adam was like, come on.
You're stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid. So tell him I'm stupid. But I'm saying this because it's so important and so intricate in what he does. It's what he does.
Mm.
You know, some people are thinking...
It's his DNA. It is Sam.
It's his DNA, yeah. So I saw... I don't know if you saw Lionel Sanders' video recently where he bonked.
Yeah.
Doing an Ironman, and it was like, you know, he said, I can't do this anymore, I want to quit. And it's not even a question for Sam. The discussions we have is, when he's 70, he's going to be doing this. Yeah?
Yeah.
And he does this because it's really hard, because some of the answers, I love it. And that concept of love isn't always our concept of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it. I do it because it's what I do.
Mm.
You know, it's not like, oh, I'm in pain, I'm going to stop. Lila, I can't do it anymore, I'm in pain. It's like, nah. The biggest trait, I think, you know, for cyclists as well, is managing pain.
Mm-hmm.
And your pain threshold. He doesn't think about it. He just thinks, I've got to finish.
Yeah.
And the pain. What's that saying in Lion King about pain? When
pain.
Yeah, when Rafiki hits.
Oh, well, it's the path that can hurt.
See?
It was the path that can hurt. You run from it or learn from it.
Learn from it. So it's a scene in Lion King where, you know, Rafiki finds Simba and he hits him with a stick over his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he said, why did you do that? He goes, and he says, you know, the past, you can either
run from
it or learn from it. And that's what we do. So he trains, nutrition not working, we fix it, we learn from it. And we just put stuff in the, everything's a learning process. Everything is just, I'm also, as you know, a new coach.
Yeah.
I used to write computer software code and sell computer systems. You know, what do I know? But what I know is how to communicate with Sam.
Yeah, of course.
Sam has done a sports science course, so I can learn things from him. And not only that, I live my days in books. Hmm. I live my days in literature about nutrition, about training, about everything. And I do that because Sam is very precious to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hurt him. Yeah.
He's your blood at the end of the day. He's your son.
He is. Yeah. That's it. And then there's that whole side of father-son relationships, you know, or father-child relationships, you know, the Williams, Tiger Woods, Lewis Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great example there. You know,
Was that runner? Is it Redmond? Derek
mm-hmm.
Redmond?
Mm-hmm.
You remember he was running the 400 meter race?
Yeah.
The Olympics, and he got a hamstring and the dad ran out the stands and helped him across the line.
Yeah.
Those are for me like the moments in life that are just absolutely wonderful.
Mm.
That's how I see our relationship. Like, it's to sum up, it's if Sam wasn't doing what he was doing and it wasn't for the autism, I wouldn't have known him as well as I do when he's 28.
Mm.
Because he could have left home, married, children, living in another country. And I'd only see him on Zoom. But now I've got a chance to understand the adult, understand the man, what motivates him. And we're mates. We're annoying mates, but that's life. You know, it's...
It's lovely. Like I think your relationship is very lovely. It really is. Like I would say that my relationship with my, I think I talked about this before with you, my relationship with my dad is, I have a very interesting relationship with him because my dad was in a coma at one point. And so that relationship got flipped in its head where it was son looking after father
mm-hmm.
recovery. And that was very hard for my dad to deal with because he's a very proud man.
Yeah.
He's a stubborn sod, very northern and very proud. And the vulnerability of him in that situation actually brought us a lot closer together than when we were kids. And I guess our relationship, how our relationship is now is very much, we're incredibly close, but we don't see each other very often. And a lot of that is because he lives in the Isle of Man and I'm now in the Peak District, but it was much harder obviously when I was living in London, and obviously COVID just puts a whole nother perspective on that. But our relationship is very much that if I know that if something's wrong with him or something's wrong with me, the first person I would call is my dad.
Yeah.
And same, the first person he would call is me. And that's how we are in our relationship. But my parents split up when I was 3, so I was very young, and it meant that it greatly affected, you know, the time I actually spent with my parents. I wasn't with my mum a lot, I wasn't with my dad a lot, I was quite often between them, and actually spent most of my time with my grandparents.
Yeah.
And so I find it really lovely to see the relationship that you guys have and will continue to have, and it's your father-son relationship and also coach and athlete and also friends.
Yeah.
And all three of them are incredibly important and all three of them are fantastic. You know, it's really lovely.
And I think that's the part of the story that goes beyond autism, goes beyond sport, goes beyond
100%.
I mean those are like the big bits, because I speak to people who have just said to me, you know, oh my god, phenomenal dad, and I think I'm a normal dad doing what you should do, you know, but not everybody has the experience. You know, I have a good friend of ours who lost both his parents when he was 3.
Mm.
You know, he's 50 odd now.
Yeah.
And that's had a real stamp on his life and how he sees the world. You know, he actually latches onto every old person he sees. And then he lives is what he doesn't have. But yeah, it's. I did one of these. I did a Zoom to. I did a Zoom the other day. Yeah, to a corporate.
Mm.
They asked two of us to do a Zoom. So it's called Havas Helia. You know, big customer relationship company, 17,000 staff, but we only had about 60 people on the Zoom call. Mm. Only 60. And I started talking about this and I showed Sam CNN video and I just felt myself welling up. You know, and the bits of it, I say, I can't help myself. I'm like, God, man up, you know, what is this? You know, but it does have, I don't sometimes know how important it is,
mm.
what it does to people.
Mm.
I don't know because we live it, so it's not the same as watching it. And the feedback I got from that day is that at the end, we were on like for an hour and I said, are there any questions? And it was quiet. And I'm thinking, I must have been bloody boring. And that's the first thing. You know, they must have thought this was like, and you know what? The guy wrote back to me and said that so many people were so emotional at the end of it, they didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And they wanted to, and it was afterwards, we got, you know, a few emails through and we got the comments back.
Yeah.
And there were really positive comments, but you don't know till, it's like watching one of those movies where you think, oh man, I'm not going to cry. Yeah, that's a good movie. You know, yeah. and so on. So, it was, you know, it's a great journey and touch wood, we're at the beginning of it. And it's got a long way to run and I've got good genes in me for living long. So I'm going to be nagging people for a long time as long as I'm healthy. So,
it's fantastic.
Sam's granddad's. How old is granddad?
90.
Yeah.
90.
Good gene.
And how old has got mine in Jamaica? 87, you know, and they think they're going to live forever. So, you know, we're fine. We're good.
Hmm. And what's
have you got enough, sir?
I think I've got tons, honestly. It's fantastic.
Sure.
Yeah, oh, loads. I'm going to just stop recording now.